This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 390 of Israel's genocide in Gaza as the war on Lebanon expands. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and Lebanon. Israel has continued to slaughter Palestinians in the northern Gaza Strip as a complete siege on the area continues for the fourth week. This is the scene in northern Gaza, stated reporter Anas El-Sharif on Tuesday. After a catastrophic massacre yesterday in Beit Lahia, Anas's colleague, journalist Hossam Shabbat, tweeted, quote, "No cemeteries, no hospitals, no doctors, no civil defense, no ambulances. The living are under the rubble, and no one can rescue them. The situation in North Gaza gets more horrific by the minute." At least 109 Palestinians were killed in the airstrike that completely destroyed a five-story building sheltering displaced families in Beit Lahia. The Gaza government media office reported that, quote, "the occupation army knew that this residential building contained dozens of displaced civilians and that the majority of them were children and women who were displaced from their civilian residential neighborhoods." This new crime comes in conjunction with the Israeli occupation's plan to destroy the health system in the northern Gaza Strip governorate and destroy the four hospitals and put them out of service, as well as in conjunction with the occupation's prevention of the entry of treatments, medicines, and medical supplies. People searched through the rubble with their bare hands, trying to rescue survivors. Another airstrike in Beit Lahia killed at least 10 people later in the day on Tuesday. According to reporters, many of the people sheltering in Beit Lahia were displaced from nearby Jabalia, which has been under heavy siege and brutal attacks over the last several weeks. Early on Tuesday morning, Israeli forces burned the United Nations Al-Fakhura School in Jabalia camp north of the Gaza Strip. Last Thursday, October 24th, Gaza's Civil Defense Corps reported that the Israeli military carried out a major massacre in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, destroying at least 10 residential buildings. According to local news agencies, approximately 150 people were killed or injured in that attack. Journalist Anas El-Sharif reported that because of the complete destruction of medical services in northern Gaza, quote, "anyone who is injured will be martyred. Jabalia camp is being exterminated on the heads of its residents." The next day, journalists reported that the Israeli army stormed Kamal Adwan Hospital, kidnapping medical personnel and patients. The soldiers rampaged through the hospital, destroying equipment and personal belongings while laying siege to the building itself. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated that, quote, "in addition to separating the men from the women and children, the occupation forces began questioning, abusing, and assaulting anyone over the age of 13, including medical personnel." The Israeli army bombed the hospital's oxygen station, threatening the lives of the 15 patients in the intensive care unit, including children. There is also preliminary information that several children have already died from the oxygen shortage. Communication is completely cut off within the hospital in light of the danger to everyone's lives. The hospital was stormed just hours after the arrival of an international delegation carrying a limited amount of medicine and fuel supplies. The young son of the hospital's director, Hossam Abu Safia, was killed inside the hospital by Israeli tank shelling that day. Here is a video of Dr. Abu Safia and his colleagues in the courtyard of the hospital performing burial rites for his son, Ibrahim.
Allahu Akbar! السلام عليكم ورحمة الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Dr. Abu Safia said that after the Israeli army's withdrawal from the hospital, more than 30 of his colleagues were taken or arrested, leaving just him and a colleague, a pediatrician, to care for nearly 150 patients, some of them in need of surgeries that he or his colleague cannot perform. Speaking to Al Jazeera, Dr. Abu Safia said on Saturday that, quote, "We have lost everything in this hospital, even our children. Everything we have built, they have burned. They burned our hearts. They killed my son. My son was killed because we are carrying a humanitarian message. Our children are being killed. I buried my son beside the hospital wall." On Tuesday, Dr. Abu Safia again spoke to Al Jazeera in the aftermath of the Israeli siege on the hospital. He said, quote, "The Kamal Adwan Hospital and the entire vicinity is a war zone. The hospital is left with no resources, no medical supplies, and no medical staff," he said. "We appeal to the entire world to have a safe humanitarian passage opened immediately and without any delay. We need specialized medical staff in all major disciplines to be allowed in," the doctor said. Adding, quote, "I received a wounded child who is in dire need of abdominal surgery to stop his internal bleeding before he loses his life. Many children have their bones sticking out of their bodies, requiring urgent orthopedic surgeries. Many are suffering from brain injuries and require delicate procedures." On October 24th, Ash-Shuhada School in Nuseirat camp was hit and a fire reportedly broke out, according to the government media office. 17 Palestinians were killed, including 9 children, and more than 50 others were injured. On October 26th, Israel committed a massacre in Beit Lahia. Journalist Anas Al-Sharif reported that dozens were killed and injured when Israel bombed 5 homes. Israel also attacked sheltering families in Nuseirat refugee camp and Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip, as well as in Gaza City, just south of Beit Lahia, over the last few days. On Monday, the Wafa news agency reported that 3 Palestinians, including a child, were killed by Israeli bombs in the Burej and Maghazi refugee camps in central Gaza. According to local reporters, the child in Maghazi was shot by an Israeli drone. Israel attacked Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis early this morning, bombing tents sheltering displaced people. Israel's mass forced expulsion of Palestinians, attacks against hospitals and medical workers, and the magnitude of destruction in northern Gaza is, quote, "an unforgivable, relentless campaign against a population who do not have another choice," according to the emergency coordinator for Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, this week. Last week, the Palestinian Civil Defense Corps announced that they were forced to completely stop their operations in the north of Gaza due to Israel's nonstop massacres and targeting of firefighting and search and rescue vehicles. According to the Civil Defense, along with the complete siege of all 3 hospitals in the northern area, 5 of their members were arrested by Israeli soldiers and abducted to an unknown location. Israeli tanks, they added, shelled and destroyed the only remaining fire truck. And 3 of their members in Beit Lahia were targeted by an Israeli drone. Following the storming and rampant destruction of Kamal Adwan Hospital earlier this week, as I reported, the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza stated, quote, "We do not understand how the world allows itself to stand by and watch the most heinous genocide and the most widespread systematic operation to destroy the health system and kill and arrest patients and medical staff without doing anything." The United Nations said this week that, quote, "children in Gaza are not only dying from bombs, bullets, and shells, but also because those who survive are prevented from leaving Gaza to receive life-saving care." According to UNICEF, only 127 children in critical condition have been allowed to leave the strip since May. Joyce Msuya, the acting Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and the Emergency Relief Coordinator for the United Nations, stated over the weekend, quote, "What Israeli forces are doing in besieged North Gaza cannot be allowed to continue. Hospitals have been hit and health workers have been detained. Shelters have been emptied and burned down. First responders have been prevented from saving people from under the rubble. Families have been separated, and men and boys are being taken away by the truckload. Hundreds of Palestinians have reportedly been killed. Tens of thousands have been forced to flee yet again. The entire population of North Gaza is at risk of dying, Msuya said. Similar statements were made by the UN's human rights chief, Volker Türk, who said that the darkest days of the, quote, Gaza conflict are unfolding. The UN Human Rights Office said it was, quote, appalled by the attacks in Beit Lahia and called for a, quote, prompt, transparent, and detailed investigation into the circumstances of the strike and responsibilities for it. Meanwhile, the spokesperson for the U.S. State Department and custodian of Israeli war crimes, Matthew Miller, called it a, quote, horrifying incident with a horrifying result, but of course insisted Washington had contacted Israeli officials and, quote, made clear we want to know exactly what happened, how you could have a result that produces, according to reports, dozens of children dead, and we don't yet know the answer to that question. Israel has killed five more journalists this week in Gaza, bringing the number of media workers killed since October 2023 to more than 180, according to the government media office. Syed Radwan from the local Al-Aqsa TV, Hamza Abu Salmiya from the Sanad News Agency, and Hanin Barud, who worked for Al-Quds Foundation, were killed in Israeli airstrikes. In separate attacks, Nadia Imad Al-Sayed, a media professional, producer, and presenter with radio stations and media outlets, and Abdul Rahman Samir Al-Tanani, who worked with Zaman and Sawat Al-Shab radio stations, were also killed, the Gaza government media office stated. This week, the Israeli parliament passed bills to ban the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees, the latest in a series of measures aimed at debilitating and destroying the agency over the last year. UNRWA, which supports Palestine refugees in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem, as well as in Lebanon and Syria, provides education, healthcare, social services, and emergency relief to people who have been expelled from their original land and villages in historic Palestine for the last 76 years and counting. Philippe Lazzarini, the head of the agency, admonished the Israeli government's move to ban UNRWA and said that it sets a dangerous precedent in that it opposes the UN Charter and violates Israel's obligations under international law. Lazzarini said, quote, these bills will only deepen the suffering of Palestinians, especially in Gaza, where people have been going through more than a year of sheer hell. It will deprive over 650,000 girls and boys there from education, putting at risk an entire generation of children. These bills increase the suffering of the Palestinians and are nothing less than collective punishment, he said. Putting an end to UNRWA and its services will not strip the Palestinians from their refugee status. That status is protected by another UN General Assembly resolution until a fair and lasting solution is found to the plight of the Palestinians. The Secretary General of Amnesty International stated on Tuesday, quote, this unconscionable law is an outright attack on the rights of Palestinian refugees. It is clearly designed to make it impossible for the agency to operate in the occupied Palestinian territory by forcing the closure of the UNRWA headquarters in East Jerusalem and ending visas for its staff. It amounts to the criminalization of humanitarian aid and will worsen an already catastrophic humanitarian crisis. Of course, since the agency's inception a year after the Nakba in 1949, there has always been one very simple alternative to UNRWA, and that would be forcing Israel to end its colonial project and let the millions of Palestinian refugees return home. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of this one by Asil Al-Mansi about her harrowing experience being forcibly expelled out of Jabalia earlier this month. Asil writes that she and her family at home in Al-Fallujah neighborhood of Jabalia had taken in her cousin and his family who were escaping certain death, she says, after a missile landed on the roof of her cousin's home. They stayed away from windows because, quote, there was shrapnel and bullets flying everywhere. We all stayed in one room, stuck together, and prayed for safety. In our house, we were 25, including my family and our displaced relatives. None of us dared even step outside at this point, she writes. Asil explains that on October 9th, helicopter gunships and quadcopters rained down bullets on rooftops, destroying water tanks. The next morning, they saw their neighbors on the move, and the family decided to leave their house too. Asil talks about her beloved cat, Falful, quote, who had moved with us from the very first days of the war and accompanied us through every stage of our journey. Falful held a special place in my father's heart, perhaps even more than the rest of us. The morning of October 18th unfolded as normally as any during genocide. We woke up, baked bread, prepared breakfast, and performed Friday prayers together. At 2 p.m., everything suddenly went black. I couldn't see, hear, or speak. Around me was just dense blackness. Sand and dust blurred my vision. I could barely see. I had a terrifying thought that I was the only survivor because I couldn't hear anyone else. Gradually, sounds returned. I felt rubble beneath my feet. I stumbled forward until I heard my mother's voice. Osama recited the Shahada. I bear witness that there is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. We all repeated after him, feeling that death was at our door. Slowly, the darkness lifted, and we began to see the devastation around us. In the living room, we found my father unconscious. We screamed. My mother checked him, fearing the worst, but suddenly he opened his eyes and assured us that he was fine. But he was injured. His right leg was torn, bleeding profusely with bone showing. We shouted for help, and our neighbors rushed over to carry him on a rug from the living room to the door to wait for an ambulance. Osama and Karam carried him outside, both barefoot, stepping on rubble, broken furniture, glass, and shrapnel. My mother followed, shocked and bareheaded. My sisters and I were left behind, wondering what to do. We knew we had to leave, so we packed what was left of our belongings and kept looking for Falful. From the moment of the bombing, I had searched for Falful. We couldn't find him. Carrying our bags, we left the destroyed house in tears, worrying for our wounded father and mourning his missing cat. Falful, his loyal companion, would wait for my father by the door even when he was late and only ever wanted to sleep by his side. Falful would even jump on my father when he came home with his favorite treats and refused to let anyone else bathe him. At the end of the piece, Asil writes, quote, "My father, Osama, and Karam are still besieged at Al-Awda Hospital in Jabalia. My father's wound has reopened and he is in desperate need of surgery. We have learned also that our beloved Falful is still in the house where we'd been bombed, sitting in the very spot where my father had been injured, as if waiting for us to return." That's from Asil Al-Mansi's feature, Escaping Jabalia, on electronicintifada.net. Turning northwards, Israel has continued to escalate its bombing attacks against civilians across Lebanon in recent days. The United Nations reports that recent strikes on the governorates of Baalbek, Hermel, and Bekaa in eastern Lebanon have killed at least 60 people and injured dozens, according to local authorities. Lebanon's health ministry reports that at least 2,700 people have been killed and nearly 13,000 wounded in Israeli attacks since October of 2023. The ministry reported that at least 77 people were killed on Tuesday alone in airstrikes across the country. In the ancient city of Tyre, or Sur, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, Israel has carried out a series of bombing attacks on buildings. Euromed Human Rights Monitor says that Israel has increased its use of internationally banned white phosphorus bombs on Lebanon. Quote, "Israel is escalating its crimes against civilians and protected objects in Lebanon by using internationally prohibited weapons and highly destructive bombs for the fourth consecutive week since the start of its large-scale assault. Last week, Israel killed several journalists in the south of Lebanon in what media outlets say was a targeted attack. Ghassan Najjar, a cameraman for the Lebanese channel Al-Mayadeen, the channel's broadcast engineer Mohamed Reda, and Al-Manar's cameraman Wissam Qasim were all killed in the airstrike. The killings came just a day after Al-Mayadeen's Beirut office was bombed. According to the news outlet, Al-Mayadeen had evacuated the premises at the onset of the aggression against Lebanon. Over the past year, Al-Mayadeen's journalists have been threatened, assaulted, and killed. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to share videos of people expressing defiance and resilience in the face of Israel's widening campaign of destruction. Artist and content creator Jaber Tabet uploads videos and photos of Palestinian children, well-loved dogs and cats, and his family. This is a video he took this week of a children's choir in practice at a shelter in Nuseirat camp in central Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.